Welcome to the Full of Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:42 British Summer Time. Today is October 26th. Today being Friday, it's the big picture, long-term audio for the various different asset classes. If we have a review of what's been happening this week, then precious metals have continued to pull back, but are coming back into an area of potential support. The $1,700 area for gold represents an almost $100 decline, and 50% decline from when that impressive rally got started from about 1,600 back at the end of August and early September. So it's a potential area of support. And the other precious metals are also back into potential areas of support. And the industrial metals are back into potential areas of support. Stock markets have been led lower by Wall Street, and the S&P has returned to test this 1400 area, which represents the first area of potential support. It is the previous peak, and if the market can continue to hold in this area, then that will be very positive indeed. But we really do need some clear upper dynamics to suggest that demand is returning to dominance in this region. So far, there hasn't been a great deal of a contagion from Wall Street, and Europe has succumbed somewhat this week, but hasn't really been pulling back to the same extent as Wall Street, and a number of the ASEAN markets have barely pulled back at all. The Nikkei has rallied over the last few weeks, but encountered resistance this week in the region of 9,000. The Hang Seng was weaker today by over 1%. And has encountered resistance in the region of 22,000. The ASX, having been a relative strength leader over the last few months, does look a little bit susceptible at present to at least some consolidation. And the China A-share market, which has lost downward momentum over the last month, was hit with a very large downward dynamic in here today. And the fact that you have China and the USA moving towards changes in their leadership over the next month adds a degree of uncertainty, and that is being priced into markets at present. The fact that we're in the third quarter earnings season, and that I think 125 of the S&P 500 companies reported earnings this week added an additional degree of uncertainty, and the fact that most of those have been disappointing. And following rather impressive rallies, some of those valuations had got to be a bit less attractive, then we are in for a little bit more of a volatile time. And the question really is to what extent we're going to see consolidation in the equity markets and how much of the previous gains can be held. But when we look at other markets, US Treasuries, against a background of somewhat uncertainty in the stock markets for the next 6 weeks, then the chances are that we could see an additional rally in U.S. government bonds. And treasuries were stronger today by almost 1.5 points, but they've also had a progression of lower rally highs over the last 3 months, and the 150 area represents the most recent of those. And they would really need to sustain a move above 150 to question the medium-term top formation that has been developing over the last 3 and 4 months. The dollar has been rallying for much of the week, and it was relatively unchanged against the euro today. But the euro has been pulling back somewhat. It encountered resistance over 130 earlier on this week, and it's pulled back. It found support against the pound in here today in the region of 80. And we are still in this very rangy environment for the majority of the major currencies. When one goes further afield, then it does look like the Norwegian crown, which has been a tower of strength, does look like it's coming under a bit of pressure at present. And the Asian dollar index has got right up to the upper side of a medium-term range, and it does look like it could weaken from here. So that is also reflective of the generally more uncertain environment that we have. And when I did a review of a number of different aristocrats this week, and the prevailing trend through that group of companies, which has generated some of the most consistent trends over the last 2 years, is one of mean reversion. And that's a short-term theme, and it's potentially a medium-term theme. But when we look at where the long-term themes are, then there are four that really jump out. And one is that government bonds represent the biggest bubble of them all, which has yet to pop. And the second is that gold, now in its 12th year of consecutive advances, represents the market that is most likely to form the next bubble. And the growth of the global consumer, and the fact that we're seeing hundreds of millions of people being lifted out of poverty and into the middle classes, represents the beginning of what has the potential to be a secular bull market. And that would suggest that this is a growth opportunity for not just the medium term, but over the significantly longer term. And the fourth theme is natural gas being a game changer for the energy sector. And it's very important, because as long as we're seeing natural gas displacing oil demand, then the high prices, which people have come to get used to over the last decade, are unlikely to persist beyond the end of this decade. And we're seeing that simple economics are prevailing over some of the more ambitious ideological boondoggles that have been pursued by various politicians. And the simple economics are that supply of natural gas globally is expanding at a prodigious rate, and downward pressure continues to be put on pricing. Natural gas in the US is currently at $3.38. At $2, where it was about 3 months ago, a large amount of supply was shuttered in the USA. So $2 can be considered to be the lower side of the range. But above $4, and we start to see that a large amount of additional capacity becomes economic. And that would suggest that we're going to see natural gas in a broad range between $2 and $4, and perhaps a bit more plus or minus, but not very much more than either side of that, for the foreseeable future. And this is having a widespread impact on the energy sector. So we're seeing that countries like Canada, which is an energy exporter, is attempting to diversify its markets, because there is the real possibility that if the USA follows the correct path, then it could become energy independent, and that would be deleterious for Canadian exports south of the border. And they're building pipelines to export their energy resources to Asia. And such is the glut of natural gas in the USA that they're contemplating building their own export terminals. And that represents an additional flow of supply into the global market. Natural gas prices are so low that it is now competitive with coal. And because it is not only cheaper than coal, but cleaner than coal, then it is becoming the fuel of choice for the utility sector. And the combined cycle natural gas plants are that bit more efficient. They can also burn oil. So there is the technological innovation that is producing this natural resource, but also in consuming the natural resource, the technology is progressing rather quickly. And of course, where most people had considered that oil could never be displaced by any other fuel was in the transport sector. And yet we're seeing that There are haulage vehicles that are currently being put into production that will run on natural gas, and that the stranded gas, which is widely available in the USA but is not serviced by a pipeline, we're seeing that there are plans to build gas-to-liquids refineries to bring that gas to market and to turn it into higher-value products. So there is the real possibility that gasoline from oil can be displaced with gasoline produced from natural gas. And that is setting up the potential over the next decade that oil prices can come meaningfully lower and stay lower. And that's an important trend, because higher energy prices act as a tax on the consumer. And it is the consumer who has been the real victim of the credit crisis. And household budgets have deteriorated. And unemployment has risen. And the cost of living has increased. And that is something that could begin to reverse in the next decade. And that is important, because when one looks at the global economy and looks at the prevailing trends, then the rise of the middle class in Asia has been very much to the forefront over the last 5 years. They have successfully adopted a capitalist orientation in their governance. They've adopted, or at least attempted to adopt, anti-inflationary bias and sound fiscal policies. And they've been rewarded with extraordinarily high growth and rising living standards. And it's creating a consumer class which, through hard work, are gaining the standard of living that many of us in the West simply take for granted. And what we're seeing in the West is a needs-must attitude among the corporate sector. And governance has improved among the corporates. And we're seeing a process of balance sheet optimization, where corporates are increasing their amount of debt and locking in record low yields and the lowest cost of capital that they have been able to access in decades, and they're buying back their shares. So the shares of these globally oriented companies with the reach to be able to optimize their balance sheets, the shares are actually, the supply is decreasing, even as the health of their balance sheets far outshines that of their respective governments. And that's a supply inelasticity market. And we are currently in the process of appreciating just how important these companies are, how secure their yields are, how strong their growth models are, and the demand component of the market is increasingly taking notice of that. And we're in a supply inelasticity meets rising demand market for a number of these globally oriented companies, which we refer to as autonomies. And that is a secular theme. Now, the needs must argument goes through to the USA and to Europe, where governments have taken on enormous amounts of debt. But if energy prices are going to continue to trend lower, and just-in-time manufacturing continues to evolve, and factory automation continues to evolve, and there is every reason to believe that it will, Foxconn in China is expected to make 100,000 people redundant over the next 3 and 4 years as it moves much more towards automation. And if we move towards more automated factory procedures, and you go to a situation like Philips, which can produce its electric razors in China and employs over 3,000 people in its factory doing that, or it's built a new factory in the Netherlands where it employs less than 200 and is getting the same productivity because of automation, then the economics of that are compelling. And if you take labor costs out of the equation, then the next large considerations from the perspective of anyone in the corporate sector are energy prices. And once you've taken care of energy prices, you look at transport costs. And subsequent to that, you look at regulation in the various jurisdictions. At present, the USA has got a competitive advantage in terms of its energy. It also represents the largest consumer market. And the fact that there are already energy-sensitive companies moving back to the USA represents an important change. The fact that it has the largest consumer market is also important, because when you moved to an environment where you have factory automation becoming a very important theme, then the transport links and the energy prices become so much more important, and your proximity to your end customer is then a really important factor. So while Europe still labors under the ideology of really very expensive energy prices, and I think it's arguable whether they're competitive in labor, the USA has come through a very, very difficult 12 years, and the challenges have not yet ended, and we're approaching the fiscal cliff, but those are government problems, whereas the corporate sector is in much better health. And the fact that there is the possibility that it is the size of one's consumer economy is likely to be the determining factor for growth over the next decade and two decades is a very interesting proposition. And it is an aspect where Europe and the USA have got an advantage, and it makes it more important than ever for countries with large populations like China, India, Indonesia, Africa, and the Middle East, and indeed much of Latin America, to develop those consumer markets, because it is the consumer is likely to be the growth engine over the coming decades. In other words, we're going to see an Americanization of the global economy. The consumer already represents 70% of the US economy, and that's likely to continue to be an important trend. When we think again about the bubbles that are out there, and US treasuries, gilts, bunds, JGBs, without doubt represent a bubble. But it is a bubble supported by governments. And if we look at the reason why we're seeing so much debt being produced, it's because of, at base, the slowing velocity of money in a number of these economies. And the central banks are going to continue to increase the supply of money until they see the velocity starting to pick up. And the velocity of money picking up would be a sound indication of broad-based growth, not growth that has been bought with additional liquidity, but real growth, growth in the wider economy and in the real economy. And when we see that, that will rob the market of what has been relying on to fuel the momentum that has driven yields to historic lows. And that will be, when we look at what the potentials are, many people are looking at the return of widespread inflation to drive yields higher, and it's a possibility. But perhaps a more realistic possibility is the return of growth. And in a growing economy, then interest rates quite a bit higher than they are today would be the norm. And in my view, that is probably the most realistic possibility. So there are incredible problems with the fiscal cliff and with the unfunded liabilities in Medicare. They're literally impossible to pay. But it is important to ruminate exactly on what the word impossible means. And if the money doesn't exist to pay them, then they're not going to be paid. And that removes the great worry for the long term. There's going to be an incredible worry about the fiscal cliff and about how those debts are going to be paid. But at root, something is going to happen to ensure that this massive liability is mitigated. And the real growth argument will take hold subsequent to that. Government bond yields will rise eventually. And when they do, anyone who's been piling in, assuming that what is, for all intents and purposes, a momentum move and mistaking it for value, is going to be burned. And then people are going to start looking at markets that can hold their value. And because people have these incredible doubts about the ability of central banks to maintain their purchasing power of their currencies, then they're investing in gold. And gold has, far from being a barbaric relic, is a store of value for a lot of people. And a lot of investors are holding gold because they're fearful about their purchasing power, but other people like to literally hold gold in their hands. And they are looking at it as something that is solid, something that simply can't be printed into existence. And they like it for its historic integrity and the fact that it has always been money. And there are a number of reasons to own it. And perhaps important to point out is that even though gold prices have fallen by about $100 in the last 3 weeks, the holdings at ETFs continue to hit new highs. So it suggests that even though prices are falling, investors continue to put money into gold bullion. And we're not in an accelerated phase, and this is not a momentum-driven market. This has every possibility to eventually turn into an investment mania, and there is no great evidence that that is occurring just now. And the fact that gold is coming back into a potential area of support and has probably gone through its distribution phase in this consolidation and has entered its accumulation phase suggests that we are going to see additional highs for the metal in the not too distant future, and almost certainly next year. And that is a bubble that could eventually peak out. And when it does eventually peak out, then gold is likely to enter a secular bear market, and it's unlikely to outperform asset classes for a significant amount of time subsequent to popping. But in the meantime, the chances are that we're going to see significantly higher prices. And because the consumer-oriented shares that are leveraged to global growth really represent an undervalued asset class at these levels, the chances are that even though we're in a mean reversion phase right now, that it's likely to present a buying opportunity in a number of these sectors, and that we're going to see additional PE ratio expansion and contracting dividend yields in the autonomies over the medium term, and that would suggest that we're going to see higher prices on aggregate for the entire sector. And I think with that, I will leave you for the evening, and I wish all the best to all of you.